This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
It's Monday. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony continues his break with his family. He is the president of the Family Research Council, and I'm the producer of this radio program and a 30-year media veteran. Well, President Trump's critics and political adversaries are openly questioning, and this is just crazy, his basic mental fitness for office in light of Michael Wolff's hotly debated tell-all book about the Trump family. Someone who knows Donald Trump well, David Vossi, best-selling author of Let Trump Be Trump, will be here to give his perspective about President Trump. He also served on his campaign, deputy director of his campaign and part of the transition team. He'll be here to help us analyze the underlying agenda. And yes, friends, there is an agenda with these claims. And on Washington Watch, we like to share good news to balance much of the negative reports of politics. Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry will be here to discuss the new guidelines for prayer in public schools. And more good news, the U.S. Supreme Court declined today to disrupt a state law protecting Mississippians against government discrimination. Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel Kevin Thoreau will join us with the latest on that news. And of course, we'll take your calls towards the end of the program. You can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, and you can follow me at Russ Jones Speaks. And of course, all of this great content is archived on TonyPerkins.com. Well, the left continues to speculate about President Trump's mental stability, claiming he is, quote, unfit for office. The media has become unhinged. Listen.
About President Trump's mental health is growing in the wake of new revelations from Michael Wolff's book and the president's increasingly erratic tweets. This week, Politico revealed that Yale psychiatry professor Bandy Lee recently briefed a group of worried Congress leaders about the president's behavior. Her warning to lawmakers, quote, Trump is going to get worse.
Should Americans be concerned about the president's mental fitness that he appears to be speaking so lightly about threats regarding the nuclear button?
I think the president and the people of this country should be concerned about the mental fitness of the leader of North Korea.
The elephant in the room. That's what the Columbia Journalism Review called Donald Trump's mental health today. The president's sanity is something that everyone thinks about and most journalists have not figured out how to discuss. And no one in the world could do more harm to more people faster than the president of the United States, who could plunge the world into nuclear war in minutes.
I've been at this a long time, folks. 30-some years been involved with the media and politics. Never quite seen anything like this. Joining us now is David Vossi, best-selling author of Let Trump Be Trump and deputy campaign manager of the Trump campaign and deputy executive director of the Trump presidential transition team. Last week, we had David's co-author, Corey Lewandowski, on the program. And today, David, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Washington Watch.
No, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, we set this up for you, and if anybody can give us the inside understanding, and you know, it's been rather surreal of my career. I've never known so many people involved with the administration, and these tales that I'm hearing don't fit what I hear from my friends.
Well, look, you know, this, what you just let in with, which is the just the unbelievably pathetic attacks on this president about his mental health is just stunning to me. I've been around a long time like you, and I've never seen anything quite like this. It's troubling, to say the least, that the mainstream media, who wants to discredit, who wants to delegitimize President Trump's victory over Hillary Clinton, has not stopped since Election Day and continues today. So it's been for the last year and a half, this Russia collusion garbage, which, of course, has been, the investigation's been going on a long time. There's been no evidence of any cooperation, collusion, coordination. There's just nothing there. And so now they see that slipping through their fingers, and now they go to this. And it's quite shocking to see that the mainstream media, it doesn't matter who in your montage you whether they're at CNN or MSNBC, they cannot get their fill of attacking this president and trying to tear him down. And you know, I'm just glad that, you know, even though he is an unbelievable counterpuncher and he does push back and he fights back, he's fighting for the American people. And you look at the success of the first year, even with all of this this assault on him on a daily basis.
And in your book, Let Trump Be Trump, you and Corey, you offer a firsthand account of a campaign the likes of which this country have never seen.
That's the difference, yeah. You know, and I wrote a op-ed in the Washington Post on Saturday that really tries to begin to set the record straight on this wolf nonsense. And then I called it the National Enquirer on steroids, this book. Mm-hmm. First of all, that was before I read the book, and I haven't read the entire thing yet, but I'm about halfway through, and it's quite boring. If you don't have the salacious backbiting and the backstabbing of the staff, which we don't even know what's true and what's not true in there. But if you don't have that, there's no substance in this book. This book is incredibly boring. And to be honest with you, not even that well written, even with a guy who's a tabloid writer. I look at my book, the one that I did with Corey on Let Trump Be Trump, and, you know, first and foremost, we lived it. We offer readers a firsthand account in Let Trump Be Trump of what it was like to be on the campaign, to be there at the transition, to be in the White House. So there's a big difference. And by the way, nobody attacked our veracity. Nobody said anything in our book. Not one thing was not true. And look, that's what this is about. This is about this reporter just trying, in my opinion. He went to a publisher and he said, lay out exactly what you think will sell the most books to the anti-Trump crowd. And they came up with a list of things. This author wrote a book to match a sales pitch in my book. And that's what I think happened. He has no credibility whatsoever. And it's just dishonest for him to have written it this way.
And you know, the Dow is off to the best start since 2003. President Trump just a little while ago spoke at the Farm Bureau Convention in Tennessee, and he signed an executive order about expanding the internet, high-speed internet in rural America. These are big issues. Have things gone perfectly? I'm sure you would say no, not at all, but they're going really well.
No presidency does everything perfectly. No president has everybody in the administration that's perfect every day of the week. It just doesn't happen. And we now live in this, you know, this era of the 24-hour news cycle. And moment to moment, minute to minute, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of these social media things that are just a constant bombardment on the American people. And so I think that on one hand, it's good to be in, you know, better contact with the American people on a daily basis. But on the other hand, it just creates this, you know, narrative that the left does every minute of every day that this guy is not successful, and it's anything but. I mean, you look at Neil Gorsuch on what the important issues are to the American people. Mm-hmm. You know, having a tremendously successful judge like Neil Gorsuch ascend to the Supreme Court, and what that's going to mean for the pro-life community, for the religious freedom in America, for upholding the Constitution, which is what you always would think of when you think of the Supreme Court, how easy it would be. But now it's become difficult over the last many years. And so it's been an assault every day, and this president puts his head down and gets to work.
And President Trump is supposed to have a physical later this week, and some say he should release his results, which is rarely involves mental health. But regardless of all of that, isn't this just grossly irresponsible kind of behavior that we're hearing?
Of course it is. Of course it is. And, this, you know, president is a machine. He, yes. has an unbelievable work ethic. He works 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. He never stops. It's one of the reasons he won, one of the most important reasons he won. He ran a campaign, and we helped him run a campaign like no one has ever seen. And I just think it was a, you know, his physical health, you know, and his mental health, both are at the highest end for the American people to know. And look, we you know, the joke on the campaign and in our book, which the president told me, you know, hey, what'd you have to mention our diet for? Because we talk about the four food groups on the plane, which were McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, pizza, and Coke, and Diet Coke. And I mean, it literally was a you know, something that we didn't stop for meals. We didn't sit down at restaurants. We didn't have the time. We were always on the move. And that's just like the rest of the American people who, you know, have to work for a living. They have to be on the move every minute of the day.
And you know, you say that, and I think what our president has done, he's given people courage. Let's listen to this real quick with me, Dave. CNN's Jake Tapper cuts an interview short with top White House aide Stephen Miller. Go.
But plenty of questions on immigration. There, you've attempted to filibuster by talking about your flights.
No,
with the president.
I
want to ask you a question because
don't be condescending, Jake.
Stephen,
Jake.
The president and the White House.
The reason why I want to talk about
the president and the White House.
The reason why I want to talk about the president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material,
you're
not going to give 3 minutes for the American people
I get
to hear the real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious.
No,
you're being a factotum in order to please him, okay?
No.
And I think I've wasted enough of my viewers' time.
You know who
Thank
I care
Stephen.
About?
As Republicans, lawmakers call for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign, in a major reversal, Democrats are now coming to his defense. What changed? We'll ask the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee next.
Wasted enough of our listeners' time.
That's the problem with the media today. They want to be the news, not report the news. And Jake Tapper, you know, in my opinion, was being completely owned by Stephen Miller, who's a friend of mine and an incredibly smart guy, and understands and was trying to explain to Jake, if he took the time to listen, exactly what the president thought of these important issues of the day, which he went on CNN to address. And of course, Jake Tapper, if it's not fitting his exact, you know, line of thinking, the way CNN wants to present it, they cut it short, and that's what they do. It's obscene. It's why the American people don't trust the media. It's why the president's going to give out in a couple of days the fake news awards, and I can't wait for that. That should be entertaining.
That should be. And just real quick in our last minute of the show, Oprah for president. Boy, they went crazy, didn't they?
Oh, that's nuts. But you know what? I hope they put her up because Donald Trump will beat her handily.
Well, David Vossi, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch, best-selling author of Let Trump Be Trump. Hey, thanks for being in the trenches.
Thanks for having me.
Well, good news in Louisiana. You know, want to know what they are? New guidelines have been released in regards to prayer in the public schools. Our good friend Attorney General Jeff Landry will be here when we return. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Monday, I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Okay, raise your hand. If you're driving, make sure to keep one hand on the wheel. Raise your hand if you're an age that you remember when there was prayer in the public schools and there wasn't outrage over it. I do. Well, listen to this. Students, teachers, administrators now have more guidance when it comes to prayer in schools, thanks to Attorney General Jeff Landry and Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. The two have released the Louisiana State Rights Review, a publication providing guidance on religious expression in public schools. Good friend of the program and the Family Research Council is with us now, Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. Attorney General, welcome to the show.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Russ, and Happy New
Year. Happy New Year to you, too. Did we lose you? All right, I think we lost the Attorney General, and it's always good to have him on the program, and they do such amazing policy work and legislation, and we like to tell you the good news and the stories about what's going on. Jeff, you there?
I'm there, Russ. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Well, welcome. And Tony says hello. Know you all do a lot of work together, and we appreciate so much what you're doing down there.
The work that y'all guys are doing out there, and always happy to be back on the show.
Well, that's mutual. Tell us about the new guidelines.
Well, to start the new year off, Congressman Mike Johnson and I released the Louisiana Student Rights Review in an effort to provide guidance on religious expression in public schools. You know, I, too, can remember, you know, I went to a private Catholic school from kindergarten through the eighth grade, but then I went to public school from ninth grade through 12th. And that public school, I can remember, I played football, and we would pray every day after practice. We would pray before and after every game, and we would pray, and then, of course, before we started the football game on Friday nights, we would pray. And I can't remember anyone being offended by it. It really upsets me, because this is a nation that was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and God was the center point of the founding of this country. And we want students to know that they have a right to express their religious beliefs and that their First Amendment rights are not surrendered at the schoolhouse door. And so we, both Congressman Mike Johnson and I, worked collectively over a number of months to put together a student's rights handbook so that students have a guidance under which they know they can express their religious beliefs of what they can do in the public school system.
Now, doesn't the document answer, I was looking through it, some of the most frequently asked questions and misconceptions that people may have about religious expression in the schools? Just name one or two of those.
Well, sure. I mean, look, schools cannot treat religious speech activities differently than other activities. There are a number of question and answers that we put together in dealing with this handout. We go through a number of questions, very commonly, quite, can I pray in school? Can we have student, can there be in certain settings a prayer? Can students express their religious beliefs? Again, a number of common questions that we put out in the handbook, and we go through it, like you said, they're very detailed, and we express those, and we give an answer. And the great thing about it is it's in an electronic format. They can go to our website at agjefflandry.com and click on Religious Freedom in Schools on the home page. And, again, there you'll be able to find our handout.
Now, Attorney General, the main key here is that they have to be student-led. Isn't that right? Student-initiated prayers, not where teachers are leading it, but where the students are.
Right. That's the important part, is that it must be student-initiated. Mm-hmm. You asking about certain questions. Can students pray at school? Yes, because prayer is private speech. Students are allowed to pray at school during non-instructional time, so long as prayers are not disruptive or appear to be endorsed by the school. I'm trying to think of a couple of others. Can students read or distribute religious materials at school? Yes. Students are able to do so during non-instructional time because schools are not allowed to treat religious materials any differently than non-religious materials. Can students pray during lunch? Yes, they can pray during lunch. Again, it's important for students out there to know that their religious beliefs are not to be dropped off at the front door of school, and that they have the ability and the right to express their religious beliefs. I can tell you, quite frankly, as a Christian, I feel like I'm persecuted here in this country for my beliefs, and that basically a muzzle should be placed on Christians when they express their religious beliefs, so that we shouldn't express our religious beliefs in the town square. That's absolutely not true. We have a right to express our religious beliefs because that's a First Amendment right.
And what's important to also know that I read in your material is that school officials cannot prohibit those activities at school unless it interferes, as I believe you mentioned, school operation or infringes on the rights of other students. Isn't that right?
Correct. Students are allowed to pray at school assemblies. They're allowed to pray athletic events when school officials are not involved. So I'll give you an example, a football team. So let's say that after practice, the captain of the team or someone on the team says, hey, guys, y'all want to come over and say a prayer? As long as the student is doing it, it's perfectly fine. And those members who wish not to pray, they don't have to participate. But again, it's important to know that those who wish to do can do so. And I think that that's an important part that's been missing. I think that people feel as though, especially students feel as though they cannot do so because there's been so much negative press about prayer in school.
Well, Attorney General Jeff Landry, thank you so much. Where can folks go find that real quick? We're out of time.
Again, they can go to agjefflandry.com. And they can click on Religious Freedom in Schools on our homepage.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your service. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. Well, earlier today, more good news. The Supreme Court refused to hear two cases challenging a Mississippi law that allows businesses and government employees to deny services to LGBT people. I'm Russ Jones. You're listening to Washington Watch. We'll talk with Kevin Thoreau when we return.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's digital action summit celebrating digital pro-life activism. Join us live via webcast on January 19th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 19th at prolifecon.com.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones. I'm filling in for Tony Perkins. Tony's been enjoying some time with his family. This show is powered by the Family Research Council, headquartered in Washington, D.C. We've got our thumb on the pulse of what's going on, not only in Capitol Hill, but with the Supreme Court and other social issues that we know that are meaningful to you. Well, earlier today, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to disturb a state law protecting Mississippians against government discrimination, leaving in place a U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit ruling, which concluded in June of last year that the law's opponents didn't discriminate, that they had been or will be harmed by the law. The Fifth Council Circuit therefore lifted an injunction that had been blocking the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, which is HB 1523, from going into effect. An Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys are part of that legal team representing Governor Phil Bryant here in Mississippi on the lawsuits in the Barber versus Bryant and Campaign for Southern Equality versus Bryant cases. With us now is Kevin Thoreau, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Kevin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello, Russ. It's good to be back. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, I live in Mississippi. Did I get all that right?
You did. It's a lot of technical stuff, but the bottom line is that Mississippi has a law that is a lot like laws that protect conscientious objectors and people who don't want to participate in the death penalty or even abortion. And those laws have been upheld across the country and across the board. And all Mississippi is doing is saying that the government can't discriminate against people because they believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
Now, let me ask you this. There's some that think this, they wish this would have gone to the Supreme Court, and maybe they missed an opportunity to strike another win for religious freedom.
Well, I mean, there's certainly that perspective, and, yeah. and if we could predict what the Supreme Court was going to do, then yeah, right. that might have been a good thing. But you and I both know that that's not if we could do that, we would be doing something else. We'd have maybe even be in Vegas, but
it's, be replacing mufflers.
Yeah, exactly. It's very difficult to know what the court's going to do. But one of the great things about this decision, or it's not really a decision, but it is a decision not to disturb the Fifth Circuit's holding, is that the Establishment Clause, as you know, protects, basically says that there shouldn't be a state-run religion, and the government shouldn't be weighing in on which religion is best. And but there are a lot of things that the government can do that aren't weighing in on religion, and this law is an example of one of those. Another example is when you have monuments, like Ten Commandments monuments, or monuments in Arlington Cemetery that acknowledge our religious heritage. The Lincoln Memorial, for instance, does that with the second with Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and you have Washington's inaugural address posted. They all mention our religious heritage, and what's happening is people are across the country are trying to challenge these because they're offended. And what this case does is it sends the signal that, look, you can't wander around your state of Mississippi or your town or even the country, find something that you're offended by, and then just go sue. You have to actually be affected by the law. And the plaintiffs in this case weren't able to demonstrate that the law had any adverse effect on them at all. And so these good laws don't harm anyone, and that's what the Fifth Circuit acknowledged, and what the Supreme Court tacitly allowed to stand by not taking this case.
So essentially, the law in question prevents quote unquote protected minorities from filing frivolous lawsuits because they disagree with another religious belief.
It really does, and I think that what we're seeing here is hopefully. An acknowledgement by the courts that we provide exceptions for people of faith, people with a conscience all the time. And this is just one more example of those types of laws that we're doing for people who happen to believe in traditional marriage, which, marriage between one man and a woman is something that is embraced by not just the Christian faith, but by Orthodox Jews and even many Muslims.
Now, Mississippi is not the only state facing these challenges. How does this decision here in Mississippi affect other states?
Well, I think it encourages other states to take a similar tact and enact their own protection for conscience like Mississippi has done. And I think that's important. We're hopeful that the Supreme Court will rule in our Masterpiece Cake Shop, where we're advocating on behalf of Jack Phillips, that the federal Constitution should provide a similar protection, that an individual who has a sincerely held religious belief that marriage is between a man and a woman shouldn't be forced in their business to participate in a religious ceremony that contravenes that belief. And we're hopeful in the next couple months we'll be hearing from the Supreme Court on that. But there's no reason why states can't also insulate their people by enacting laws similar to Mississippi's.
Well, Kevin, thanks for giving us an update on that. We're out of time. Appreciate you being there and doing what you're doing and being here on the radio program with us today.
You're welcome, Russ. Have a good day.
You too. Kevin Terrio, Senior Counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. You know, this is a law simply upholding the right to religious beliefs without interference from the government. It's in the Bill of Rights. Go read it. It's there. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. We're going to go to the phone lines when we come back. It's a special day today. Do you know what it is? Well, give us a call and give a guess. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. This is Washington Watch.
Can a faith
Facebook post or a tweet or an Instagram picture save a life? At Family Research Council's 13th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Join us via live webcast from Washington, D.C. the morning of Friday, January 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists, as well as testimonies from families and individuals who chose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on social media. With this innovative information, anyone can make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 19th at ProLifeCon.com. Again, visit ProLifeCon.com for more information.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Let's let that play just a little bit underneath. That's a clue. Do you know what today is? It happened 203 years ago. Remember that show, Name That Tune? I can name that tune in four notes. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Let me know if you know what today is. It involves the Mississippi River. Yeah. That's a Johnny Horton song from 1959. And the millennials are lining up to call. Hey, it's been a great pleasure to be with you. And an honor to fill in for Tony Perkins. Nobody really fills in for Tony. Tony is an amazing leader. Knower and knowledgeable on policies and where we are as a country with cultural issues and giving us the ability to look through the Christian lens and the filter. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Do you know what today is? The first clue is, it involved the Mississippi River. And it happened 203 years ago. If you also have some thoughts about some of the issues we've talked about today, prayer in the public schools, did you raise your hand when I asked you to raise your hand? If you remember a day when you could pray in the school and war didn't break out or lawsuits didn't ensue, what is it? Are we just living in a time where people are more educated and academics or people are more enlightened? I don't think so. Is that why all of this is happening and it hasn't happened over the years? Do you remember a time when you could take a knee or pray? Maybe there was prayer over the loudspeaker in school. What about President Trump and his mental capabilities? Wasn't that an interesting interview? We had David Bossie on, co-author of Let Trump Be Trump. But before we get into all of that, we just need to solve this great mystery about what happened 203 years ago today. And it involves the Mississippi River. Joseph in South Dakota, welcome to Washington Watch. You have a guess?
Yeah, it's the anniversary of the Battle of New Orleans.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding. I wish I could give you $1 million, but I can't. But hey, just knowing that you knew that. Yes, General Andrew Jackson and his Tennessee Volunteers, right? The last major war of 1812.
Exactly right.
And the British launched a full-scale attack. They tried to control the Mississippi River. And within 30 minutes, the militia won the battle and Americans held their ground, held their own, and independence was gained. So how are you doing in South Dakota? I bet you're wearing a coat today.
I am. Actually, today it's 30 degrees, but last week our high was negative 18.
30 degrees.
So it feels,
it's a little balmy there today.
It feels pretty good, yeah. I'm running around with just a shirt on, but last week when it was a high of negative 18, that was a little bit chilly.
Well, Joseph, thank you so much. You had the winning guess. Appreciate that. And thanks for listening in South Dakota, way up north. Let's go to Cassidy in Elm Springs, South Dakota. It's kind of a free-for-all session here. Call with your comments and questions, 866-372-7234. Cassidy, welcome to the show.
Hey, so it looks like South Dakota's been very well represented, and we must also know our history out here. Because I was calling, I am a millennial, who the minute you played the first bars of Johnny Horton, my six-year-old sitting next to me said, hey, it's the Battle of New Orleans. And not only do I as a millennial know what today is, but the oldest of my five kids also could tell you that today is the anniversary of the Battle of New Orleans, and we kind of like Johnny Horton, too.
And the crowd has gone to their feet and just exploded, Cassidy. Can you hear? Thank you so much. And you're doing well in South Dakota?
We are doing well. It is January thaw, so we are not wearing coats today because it's
30 degrees and feeling a little balmy.
Exactly. 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 Last week it was a high of 7 below, and today it's melting snow. So.
Well, I lived in Minnesota. I lived in Minnesota for the longest 18 months of my life. So, hey, thank you so much.
Thank you for your show. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. God bless you. Let's go to Logan in Nebraska. How are the Cornhuskers doing? Hey, Logan.
Hello?
Hey, Logan. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah,
you're on the radio. Go ahead.
I was going to call and just talk about the battle for a minute. I know the answer. I'm actually from Tennessee, and that's where Andrew Jackson was actually from. So that was just what I was calling in to kind of talk about.
Yeah, well.
Kind of been ahead of me.
They did, but that's good. It's important to know our history. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Logan. Thanks for calling, and stay warm there in Nebraska. Let's go to Oklahoma. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was just letting somebody know that I had had prayer in school whenever I was young, and my teachers, second and third grade teachers, actually took me to Sunday school.
Wow.
And also, I think Mr. Trump is quite level-headed. I mean, I don't like his tweeting all the time, but I don't, you know, but otherwise, you know, I think he's doing a good job, and to say that he's senile is kind of a crazy thing to claim that he is, because he's been such a successful businessman, and he's doing the best he can.
Well, and I think you got to put it all in perspective.
Yeah, and I just wanted to, you know, you said, did you get to pray in, you know, school? Well, yes, we did. We actually, you know, had prayer over the intercom sometimes. We had student-led prayer. Our teacher would lead us in a, you know, the Our Father Who Art in Heaven prayer, and we'd say the Pledge of Allegiance, and I will always remember my two teachers from second and third grade that invited me and actually took me to Sunday school. So I'm forever grateful.
Well, that's a great story. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for giving us a call. Thank you so much. Hey, did you anybody watch the Golden Globe Awards last night? I kind of boycotted. I can't hardly watch those shows anymore because they're just so negative. It looked like a dirge or a funeral. Everybody dressed in black, and of course understand the cause about sexual harassment. But did you listen to Oprah? Did that sound like a campaign speech? What do you think? I've got a clip here, Bobby. Let's roll that.
So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say me too again. Thank you.
Yeah. That was Oprah's comments last night at the Golden Globe Awards, and kind of saw some funny reactions online. Yeah, wouldn't it be a great idea to have a multi-billionaire with no political experience in the White House? Yeah, great idea. We've got one, and we talk about him a lot here. Let's go to Pete in St. Louis, the Show Me State, my home state. Pete, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, man. Hey. Just inject a little bit of lightness and levity on this very gray day here in St. Louis. Just about the song. I just wanted to say that I prefer the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's version from about 1976.
Yeah.
Johnny Horton's original version.
And that's a good version.
If any of my friends, either here in St. Louis or across the country, are listening, they'll know exactly who this guy is, Pete in St. Louis, calling in about the stupid music.
Hey, you know, I was 16 years old, and I had those albums, remember, the LPs, and used to play it all the time. I actually went to a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band concert, I think.
I can top that. I had the Dirt, Silver, and Gold album with the big fold-out poster of that safe door. The poster was on my closet door. I saw the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band at the granddaddy of them all in Cheyenne, Wyoming in 1986 at the rodeo there over the July whatever it was weekend.
Well, how about that? Well, how's St. Louis? I grew up in Kansas City just down the road, went to Mizzou.
I spent a little time at Mizzou. St. Louis is gray and rainy today. We did not get much ice, and we're thankful for that.
Yeah. Well, stay dry, Pete. Thanks for calling. Thanks for that input on Nitty Gritty. Appreciate it. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. Let's go to Dan way down in Houston. Dan, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Battle of New Orleans. Yeah, my relative was one of the 20 guys killed, less than 20 guys. Killed the real assassin 20 they lost over 2,000.
Mm-hmm. 2,000.
Well, people don't know that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to know. We've had a number of people that have made the right guess on that, and it's an important date to know. General Andrew Jackson, it probably determined that he would be president, don't you say?
Yes, sir. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Dan. Hey, give us a call. We've just got a few more minutes. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. And you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can find Tony on Twitter, at T Perkins. You can find me, at Russ Jones Speaks. And talking just a little bit about everything, the Battle of New Orleans and Oprah last night and President Trump. Let's go to John in Birmingham. John, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Mr. Jones.
Yes, sir.
Just add a little bit of history on that for the Battle of 1812.
Yes, sir.
Most folks don't realize it was actually the second American Revolution.
Okay, right.
And it was the war that brought out the Star-Spangled Banner.
That's right. And so you obviously like history.
Well, I used to hate it in school, but, you know, as you get older, you start living it, so it gets to be more fun.
And it's important that we hang on to that. John, thank you there in Birmingham for calling. And, boy, we got a lot of interest here in the Battle of New Orleans. It's good. I'm glad to see the response. The phones have lit up on that because, you know, people think that it's important to remember our history and to know why the Battle of New Orleans was so important. Let's go to Karen in Omaha, Nebraska. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing? You know, the first thing you asked about the date of what anniversary it was.
Yep.
I know it's not the same amount of years, but it's the anniversary of the five missionaries that were killed in Ecuador.
Oh,
Nate
that's...
Saint and Jim Elliott.
Yes. That's another important date to remember. Very important. And
I wanted to make sure the viewers were aware of that. 1956.
When was it? What year?
1956. It was the year I was born, so I remember that.
Yeah, 1956. A very good year. A bad year for them, but an important year to remember. Boy, that was a transition year going into the new decade. Let's go to Tupelo, Mississippi. Rhonda, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was going to say Battle of New Orleans, but I hear everybody else has said that too. But
yes.
I just want to add that they need to read the book that has just come out on the Battle of New Orleans. It is an awesome book.
Yeah, that isn't that Brian Kilmeade?
Sir?
That was written by Brian Kilmeade?
Yes, the one that
Yes.
Got that from one, and it's talking about the Battle of New Orleans. Well, it is about Andrew Jackson it's Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans.
The Miracle of New Orleans. That's right. Yeah, we had Brian on the radio program, and we heard about it. That was Rhonda in Tupelo. And, it's been a great day to be with you. Thank you so very much. Appreciate you listening in and tuning in. I'll be back again with you tomorrow and again on Wednesday. And look forward to being with you for a couple more days. It's been wonderful. From Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to Him, and He will make your path straight. This is Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins, and you've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council,
visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.